Suitable. Let's start that over one more time. The following hour of KDVS programming may not be suitable for all audiences, as it may contain material which may be perceived as objectionable. Parental discretion is advised. The views. Oh no, that's it. Oh my gosh, I'm so tired today. Audience, you gotta apologize. I must apologize. Lazy Lazy is still a wee bit tired. The following views presented in this hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Bada bing, bada boom, you know, we can get on our way. So, thinking thoughts. What's in for today? Had a bit of a heavier one. Let's go. Now we have some return listeners today. You know, I was kind of looking up at the clouds yesterday. You know, it's getting a bit cloudier, you know, a bit colder. You generally get a bit more clouds when you have a lower pressure region, which we're experiencing, you know. And so you get that condensation in the sky versus a very baked, dry, cloudless sky. And I was just thinking how weird the clouds look. How should I say, wispy they were. I don't know if anybody else listening has seen these kinds of clouds I'm describing. They're generally kind of torn, almost like a passing, you know, if you're melting something like vanilla into hot chocolate or something, where it's very wispy. And I started thinking a bit about the two large Category 5 hurricanes that we experienced in the Gulf Coast, we being the U.S., over the past month. Hurricane Helene and Hurricane Milton. And so I just wanted to go a bit into why they are so important. Why really every successive hurricane season is so important. And really, before we understand that, we need to know how are clouds formed in the first place? You know, how is that moisture? What are we looking at? You know, what is it that we're describing when we're talking about these giant, you know, tropical storms? So, of course, clouds are formed when air contains as much water vapor gas as it can hold. This is called the saturation point, and it can be reached in two ways. First, moisture accumulates until it reaches the maximum amount of volume of air can hold. The other method reduces the temperature of the moisture. So I'm gonna pause. So that first one, moisture accumulates. So you have some significant concentration of water in your air above us, and it reaches a maximum amount of volume of air, the maximum amount that the volume of air can hold. So basically, you know, when you're putting salt into water and eventually you start getting that salt precipitating out, kind of think of it like that, but now you're talking about two gases. You're talking about a mixture, air, and you're talking about this water vapor. And eventually you just get it so mixed that you can't mix it further and you have that water vapor, and that's what we see as clouds. The other method reduces the temperature of the moisture air, filled air, which in turn lowers the amount of moisture it can contain. So again, this time, like I said, when you're in a you know, there's kind of this similarity. Lower pressure leads to lower temperature, which leads to moisture, which leads to these clouds. So you get this reduced temperature, and think about when you put, let's say you want to make a tasty lemonade, and you want to put a bunch of sugar into it. Well, if you want to put some sugar into it, and you're trying to, say, you know, put more sugar than is possible at room temperature, you'll heat it up, you'll boil it, and you'll mix in that sugar. But if you, say, put it into the fridge or freezer, and you try to add more sugar, you'll actually be able to put less sugar than you would at room temperature. So similar principle. It's that saturation that matters. So, you know, clouds are both a intertwined, you know, reflection of whatever you might be seeing on the surface, whatever you might be seeing in the atmosphere, and wherever you might be on the earth. Quite a few differences in how you can get these clouds. So how do clouds move? You know, if you've ever stared up at the sky for long enough, staring at a funny cat made by the clouds or at a big thumb, you might notice that you'll see over time, it almost looks like it's your eyes playing a trick on you, but no, it really is moving. Of course, clouds move because wind is moving, air is moving. In fact, the air that the wind that the clouds are in is significantly faster than the near the surface. There's this relationship between the surface and friction and the wind speed around you. And so as you go further up, you get faster wind speeds. But specifically, you get these directional wind speeds due to pressure systems. Of course, pressure being when you have more of a something and you want it to go, and it wants to go to something that has less of it. So higher pressure means more atmosphere packed into the air, and lower pressure means less atmosphere packed into that air. And you want to go from high to low. I should say, not you. The air wants to go from high to low pressure. It wants to go from where there's more air to where there is less air. So that means you have a low pressure system, a high pressure system. That air pressure also depends on temperature and density. Your low pressure and high pressure system are developed based on the temperature and density of the air around you. If you have hotter air, it expands, meaning it generally will lead to higher pressure systems. If you have colder air, it contracts, it becomes smaller, you get lower pressure systems, so it's more willing to accept more air. So you also involve temperature, density, my apologies, when you have more stuff. You know, water is actually really big due to that oxygen, and so when you get more stuff, you get more compared to, you know, maybe hydrogen gas or nitrogen gas in the air. And it wants to fit in, you know, an equal amount between two spaces. You want to get an equilibrium, but maybe one is heavier, so it moves from that direction to the other. There's more of it in there. Of course, air gets colder at higher altitudes where pressure is lower. Similarly, because they call this equation of in the atmosphere to create warm and cold fronts and storms such as thunderstorms, you know, you understand that difference between, oh shoot, you have colder temperature, now you have lower pressure, maybe you have wind moving from that higher pressure to lower pressure. You get the direction of the air. It wants to go directly into that lower pressure system, but because of the other air behind it, it actually becomes more cyclic. You know, you get this circle, this spinning wind, kind of what you might think of in a storm, or if you look above a hurricane. So, you know, that's just the basics of clouds and wind. Of course, hurricanes are a bit more impactful. There's a bit more going on than just wind moving. You know, but really it is just the same basic preconditions. You just have lower pressure, higher temperature is the higher pressure, lower temperature is lower pressure. And as it tries to move, the greater the difference between that high pressure and low pressure, the more forcefully it will move. So if you have more significant of a temperature difference or more significant of a pressure difference, you'll get significantly faster wind speeds. So what does a hurricane need? How do you form a hurricane? You know, why don't we get hurricanes over here? I mean, we do SoCal, you know, a bit further south as well, just not as big as the Gulf Coast. Because hurricanes need warm water. They take that energy from the warm ocean. Of course, heat rises. So as you get hot water, which itself rises up through the oceans, you get hot air that heats up, and eventually you get a higher pressure region. This thing called convection. It pushes upwards and then it pushes outwards. You need low air pressure. You need a direction. So you need that direction of the center. And of course, because of the low pressure at its center of a hurricane, winds flow towards the center of the storm. Air is forced upwards. So you get this kind of cycle of air moving up and then circular and then back down and then up again. And flows away at the top of the storm. You need warm, moist air. So again, you need heat, warm, high pressure, moist air. You need denser air. Air above tropical ocean waters is very warm and moist. Keep that in mind. And you need low wind shear. So what does that mean? Hurricane needs the winds outside the storm to be light. So essentially, it means that around the storm, there's very little resistance. There's very little friction pushing against that hurricane forming. And so, again, that reason why we don't experience as many hurricanes here in the West Coast as you might think, you know, compared to the Gulf Coast, is because you don't have that hot tropical storm water. We have the coast. It's very cool water. It's very cold water. We get a lot of upwelling, which means we get a lot of water coming up from the ocean's bottom. The ocean's depths, and that water is very cold. It's sunk there. It's dense. So we don't get very many hurricanes because we're missing that hot, warm water, that warm, moist air. And yet you see hurricanes forming in these tropical areas. Of course, if you're thinking of the Gulf Coast, near the Yucatan, near central Mexico, Florida, that's all very tropical, very warm, very equatorial regions, so you get these storms more likely to form. So we kind of now know how hurricanes form. We know how wind moves, high pressure to low pressure. We know hurricanes need a certain amount of warm water. And so, you know, I kind of just discussed how hurricanes use the ocean. They need that warm water. It fuels them. It is their energy that they're getting from the water below them. It is driving them. And what you see, what you saw in Hurricane Helene, you know, what was so incredibly devastating was the ocean itself around the Gulf Coast has just been warming up. I won't get too deep into why that might be. Just a little blurb. It's likely because of the slowdown of the AMOC, the Atlantic Meridional Oceanic Current. Basically, water that is hot from the tropics is no longer being moved up to the Europe. It is being dumped in the Gulf Coast and staying there. And so it's cooking, you know, keeping that hot water trapped. That hot water leads to warmer, moister air because it can hold more water. So you get essentially hurricane jet fuel. I mean, it's a fun term, it's a scary term, it's a fun one to think about. Hurricane Helene, I just want to read through a timeline of this from The Guardian. Hurricane Helene slammed into Florida's Gulf Coast on Thursday night with winds above 140 miles per hour. For clarification, 150 miles per hour, I believe. Five hurricane is wind speeds of 158 miles per hour or greater. So, of course, this is just under that category. And when we refer then to storm surge, so I'm going to also be referring in these hurricanes to storm surge, that is the water that has been pushed up from this storm, from this precipitation dumped onto the areas, had a 15-foot storm surge. So think of how close these communities are to sea level. 15 feet. If you're standing on the beach, you are underwater. You are no longer on, you know, free standing air, or you're no longer able to really get air. You're underwater. You're underwater. Monday the 23rd, the National Hurricane Center in Miami warned that a broad area of pressure over the northwestern Caribbean Sea, producing disorganized showers and thunderstorms, had a high chance of tropical development over the following days. So let's dissect that. Warned that a broad area of pressure over the northwestern Caribbean Sea. So you have this high pressure forming. And of course, that high pressure is again due to that high heat of the ocean. You additionally don't have significant pressure around it. You have low pressure, low winds, very little to counteract it. Tuesday the 24th, after being classified as a tropical storm, Helene's forecast track began to come into focus, projected an acceleration towards the northeastern Gulf Coast by Thursday. Remember, this is 2 days after causing heavy rain. Considerable flooding and mudslides were seen in Cuba. Of course, this is affecting plenty more than just the American South. Like I said, this is in the central coast, the Gulf Coast, so you're affecting central Mexico, Yucatan, Cuba especially is directly in the path of this hurricane. Of course, Ron DeSantis, Florida's governor, expanded an existing emergency order. Oh, wow, surprising. Wednesday, 25th September, Helene was upgraded to a Category 1 hurricane. A Category 1 hurricane, for those curious, has wind speeds of 74 to 95 miles per hour. So very much picking up. I mean, I can't imagine seeing something going that fast. I mean, I guess a car, but to think of something, you know, all around you going that fast, it's getting a bit concerning. Helene made a north turn, with the NHC stating it was expected to rapidly intensify and grow in size over the eastern Gulf of Mexico. It continues along to the Thursday of the 26th. Helene bulked up rapidly through the day into a Category 4. That's jumping from 95 to 130 miles per hour. Now, that 40, you know, you're thinking, okay, we're going from 40, you know, 90 to 130, those are already big. 40, is that going to make a big difference? But this is just an insane speed of acceleration. You know, you have in the historical record hurricanes that take days, if not weeks, to form into these Category 4 or 5 hurricanes. This is less than a day. As the storm surge and wind combination continued, NHC stated that this would be catastrophic. That is a really cool picture I'm currently looking at, audience. It's the eye of the storm, and you can see all this lightning in it. It's very, very pretty. The storm's sheer size meant life-threatening conditions far inland. Friday, of course, as residents woke up, they saw scenes of devastation and destruction, entire coastal communities swept away by the storm surge. Now, again, that is the water being pushed up. you are getting 15 feet of water. If you are on the coast, you are likely not making it. I see a caller real quick, so we're going to play a little bit more, and I will get right back to it. If the clock strikes midnight, then what becomes of our demonstrations? To which fate have these gatherings fell? Which walls echo all the chants we yelled into faces on the coins we tossed into the wishing well? Drinking water on which we subsist, mixing into rivers that did not exist yesterday. Methinks I misclicked on the phone. So for whoever was calling in, feel free to call back. But we are about 10 minutes out from the end of the show. But appreciate all the calls. Appreciate it. Oh, we're getting it again. Back to the music. Embedded down into our path. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Back to the very, very dangerous weather we're discussing, the very real weather that we are discussing, man-made. I guess we can agree about that. But we have here the Saturday, the 28th, September. The scale of the emergency in North Carolina began to emerge. So you see just this devastation that with very little time. Again, these things in the past have been formed with cooler conditions over much longer time periods. Within a day, going from one category, or category one to category four, it's not unprecedented. Acapulco last year saw category one jump to category five overnight within less than 24 hours. So this is a bit of a concerning trend. Average temperature that we've seen over the past 12 months has stayed over 1.5 Celsius. We no longer are in the same climate equilibrium that our ancestors lived in. We are no longer in the same climate status, gosh, there's a really good phrase. Remember, Paul Beckwith was using earth science scientist's PhD. We're no longer in this same range, the same climate range that our ancestors were in. We are in such a different one. That we're seeing these surprising, you know, effects that are becoming less and less predictable. Of course, continuing on, climate change boosted Helene's deadly rain and wind, and scientists say same is likely for Milton. Moving to the time between Milton and Helene. Hurricane Helene and the storms that were happening in the region anyway have all been amplified by the fact that the air is warmer. And can hold more moisture, which meant that the rainfall totals, which even without climate change would have been incredibly high given the circumstances, were even higher. The water temperature around the coast was over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. I can't imagine what sea life is managing to survive in water over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, almost over the same temperature that it is in the summer in the air. You know, ocean temperature is generally much lower, or lower generally, than air temperature, unless you're looking at like poles or something when the water might carry a bit more heat energy. Now, referring to Helene's sibling, Milton, I don't know, I guess it's a little silly to call it its sibling, but, you know, it followed right after. The Milton actually had a much scarier intensification across the few days that it was approaching the Florida coast. Of course, the highest category 5 that we will record is one over 157 miles per hour. That, again, is category 5, catastrophic damage. But during the growth of Hurricane Milton, you saw it rocket to 180 miles per hour before making groundfall. And when it finally hit the... Tuesday morning, the Hurricane Milton was across the northern coast of Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. Storm was moving at 19 kilometers per hour over the warm waters and had maximum sustained speeds of 155 miles per hour. Wednesday morning, it was northeast. Authorities said that ocean surges and coastal flooding are expected up to 155 miles per hour. Weakened a little bit to a Category 5 before Wednesday, it neared Florida's coast. Tampa Bay predicted 10 to 15 feet of inundation. 10 to 15 feet. There's a very helpful graphic that I wish I remembered which news agency it was. They were describing about 9 feet, which is already over most people's houses or most people's and doorways and whatnot. Like, I mean, 15 feet, your house is underwater. Your house is literally underwater at that point. On Wednesday, agency NHSC warned of life-threatening storm surge, extreme winds, and flash flooding. Around this time, Milton expected to bring sustained winds on Thursday of 133 miles per hour. It did drop, but just this almost like, like the cocaine bear from that movie. You know, once it got a little bit of that water, once it got a bit of that water in its system, that warm water, it just rocketed off. And while you generally see a decrease in the speed of wind, the wind speeds as they approach the coast, as they make landfall, this still isn't something that, you know, you're saying, it's like, oh, okay, we're just going down to a Category 4. We're going down to a Category 3. The hurricane itself over water is affecting these communities. Not to mention island communities, which are even more inundated by this. Some of the warm water which Milton was passing over, like on average up into the 86, 88, and again off of the Florida coast all the way up to 100 Fahrenheit. Some were saying storm of the century. And after Hurricane Helene's current number of about 230 people dead, you know, these consistent disasters, it's not even the fact that we're having these big giant disasters, these giant hurricanes, it's the successive nature. You know, it's not the single hammer strike that breaks your splits some wood. It's the successive over and over hammering institutions such as FEMA, such as, you know, all of these other resources meant for helping people in these emergencies that are not expected to happen every few days. They're expected maybe every few years, maybe even decades. Like, these are not storms that are meant to happen with such frequency. So, what are we looking at in the future? Why does this matter? Why you know, am I talking about these hurricanes that have come and go, that on the West Coast, you know, we're not directly affected? It's because it's indicative of a greater trend. That is, that we are moving away again from the climate system that we have so long become accustomed to, that humanity has accustomed itself to, the weather of seasonality, of very expected rainfall, of floods and of hurricanes with predictability. Because once we stop losing this ability to predict these events, we completely lose our ability to understand the climate system we're in. You know, we produce these models, we produce with the expectation that whatever will occur will look like what has occurred. And it is somewhat frightening to know that in... I'm going to look up if anybody has heard of the tool Climate Reanalyzer. Very, very useful tool for looking up the daily surface air temperature, daily surface sea temperature. But that daily surface sea temperature, surface temperature, the past 2 years, we have been over any predicted, any previous empirically measured temperature over the past, when does this go down to, 2005, all the way to the 80s. We are outside of those bounds now, so far above those bounds. And it really culminates again to this change in a climate system. This has been my time. You're again listening to Thinking Thoughts by Lazy Lazy. It's been a joy to be on air, and I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of their day.
Slowly climbing back, it's not here yet, so what's it got to do with you? So close your eyes, stop your ears, close your mouth and take it slow. Let others take the lead, and you bring up the rear, and later you can say you didn't know. The weeds are all around us and they're growing. It'll soon be too late for the knife if you leave them on the wind that around the world is blowing. You may pay for your silence with your life. So close your eyes, stop your ears, shut your mouth and never dare. And if it happens here, they'll never come for you, because they'll know you really didn't care.
It was just a little while ago, I glued my ears to the radio.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You're bringing your daughter to her favorite pop star's concert. Do you A, wear earplugs?
Isn't this fun, Dad?
I have a soft pretzel.
B, remember the moment with matching concert t-shirts.
That's gonna be $180.
Or we can just take a photo.
C, show her how you used to do concerts.
We're going crowd surfing!
I can't, it's too heavy!
Oh my God! Ah.
Or D, just roll with it.
Woo! Justin! Look at us, we're over here!
Justin! OMG! He just looks, I love you, Justin! I love you!
When it comes to parenting, there are no perfect answers. But that's okay, because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Hey, I'm driving my car. Wait, where'd the lights go? Why can't I see anything? What do I do? What do I do?
When driving during a power outage, follow these important safety tips. Plan plenty of travel time. Plan a stop to get fuel. Plan for emergencies with flashlight and batteries. Stop at all intersections if traffic signals are out, then proceed cautiously. Stop at all railroad crossings. Make sure tracks are clear before proceeding. Watch for pedestrians and bicyclists on darkened streets. Watch carefully for your off-ramp and allow plenty of time for lane changes if freeway signs are dark. Exit 11 if you see a crime in progress. For information